Thank you very much, and it's a great privilege to be speaking and contributing today to another one of our series of events in the celebration of a 60th anniversary of the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights. Thank you for inviting me to be here. Cathy referred before to the listening tour that I have taken around Australia, and over the period that I did that, I've really been fortunate to meet a lot of terrific Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders from many corners of the country, from Arnhem Land, from Darwin, Canberra, Fitzroy Crossing, Redfern, Mackay. Many talented and passionate individuals who are driving immense social change in their communities. And I think they've provided me with great inspiration. So it's I'm really proud to be speaking here today on the traditional lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation, and I would like to pay my respects to their elders past and present. Now, it's a daunting task to be speaking after one of Australia's most eloquent and eminent barristers. I don't mind admitting it right up front. And I intend to rise to the challenge by leaving the legal analysis of the decision of Wei Tang entirely to Mr. Walker. So instead, today what I thought I'd do, I thought I'd focus really on one simple question, and that is, how well does Australia protect victims of trafficking, slavery and sexual servitude? Since 2003, Australia's response to trafficking has improved, as many of you who I know through contact, as you would be aware in this room. I mean, gone are the days when trafficking victims were detained in immigration centres or deported. Now the Criminal Code contains offences of slavery, sexual servitude, trafficking and debt bondage. We've seen some changes to the Criminal Code in 2005 and also 1999 to incorporate those offences. And visas and victim support are available for trafficking victims who assist police. But as I will explain, the problem is that while Australia has a legal framework to prosecute traffickers, we still don't really have a framework to protect the human rights of trafficked victims. The emphasis to date has largely been on law enforcement rather than on protecting the human rights of victims of trafficking. Although the statistics around trafficking vary widely, the conservative estimate by the US State Department is that around 800,000 people are trafficked across borders each year. 80% of those trafficked are female, and 50% of those are children. And of course, this figure doesn't include the millions of people that are trafficked within borders, within national borders, for forced labour. But however, in contrast to the magnitude of people trafficked, the US State Department also reports that in 2006, there were only 3,160 successful prosecutions worldwide. So prosecuting trafficking is difficult. In Australia, the Australian Federal Police have conducted around 150 investigations into people trafficking. However, the convictions for slavery and sexual servitude can really be counted on two hands. Thankfully, the international law recognises that a person's status as a victim of crime is not dependent on a successful prosecution. Instead, if you believe that someone has been trafficked, then you should treat that person as a victim unless and until there's a good reason to decide otherwise. Put simply, trafficking victims deserve protection and support regardless of whether their traffickers are charged or convicted. So the first challenge, though, in protecting trafficking victims is really to identify who they are. And we don't really have good data here in Australia on that particular issue. So far, the vast majority of reported cases in Australia have involved women who have been trafficked into the sex industry, such as in the Wei Tang matter. Since 2004, 107 people have been placed on the government-funded victim support program. And of these 107, 65% were from Thailand and 18% were from South Korea, and the residual were from other countries. The only male who's received victim support was suspected of being trafficked into the hospitality industry. So experience shows that the question of whether a person has been trafficked isn't always clear-cut. The features of trafficking that distinguish it from people smuggling often only become visible after the person has been subjected to exploitation. So this means that when trafficking victims are identified, they may already be in a situation of debt bondage, of sexual servitude or forced labour. A recent report found that few of the cases discovered here in Australia fit the traditional stereotype of slavery. And that's some of the issues that Brett's actually referred to. The suspected victims of trafficking who've come to the attention of the Australian Federal Police have not been kidnapped from their home villages. They haven't been held at gunpoint or chained to their beds. Instead, the fact situations are much more complex than that. In the sex industry, traffickers may facilitate women's entry into this country. The women may actually consent to come to work in the sex industry, but when they arrive, they find that their movements are very restricted. And like the victims in the Wei Tang case, they're told that they have to work off debts of up to $45,000 by servicing up to 900 customers without any pay. So as the trial judge said in Wei Tang, how could they run away when they had no money? They had no passport or ticket. They entered on an illegally obtained visa, albeit legal on its face. They had limited English language. They had no friends. They were told to avoid immigration. They'd come to Australia consensually to earn income and were aware of a need to work particularly hard in order to pay off a debt of approximately $45,000 before they were able to earn any income for themselves. And I think that while Australia has so far focused pretty much the response to trafficking on trafficking for sexual exploitation, a key issue at the recent National Roundtable on people trafficking was how Australia can improve its response to the emerging issue of labour trafficking more generally. This is becoming increasingly important in a time of labour shortage here in Australia. Because in 2008, migrant workers may find themselves in debt bondage arrangements in a range of different industries with little or no control over their conditions of work. Their passports may be withheld, they may be subjected to physical and psychological abuse. So it's not just happening in the sex industry, it's happening in other industries as well. And to that extent, you may remember some reports that Indians on tourist visas were sent to a tomato farm in New South Wales to work in conditions of virtual slavery. There were also other reports in 2008, the US Trafficking in Persons report, that men and women from India, from China, from South Korea, from the Philippines, and also Ireland migrated to Australia temporarily for work, only to find themselves put into situations of debt bondage. So what protection and support do trafficking victims need? I think there's no question that successfully prosecuting traffickers is absolutely important. However, it can only ever be one component of an effective anti-trafficking strategy. The cycle of trafficking can't be broken without addressing the root causes of trafficking or protecting the rights of all victims. Although the Australian Government's National Action Plan to Eradicate Trafficking recognises that prevention and victim support are very important, the reality is that so far victim support and prevention has really taken a back seat to the law enforcement approach. And I think this needs to change. There are four steps the Australian Government can take to improve the protection for trafficking victims. Firstly, we need to fix the visa framework for trafficked peoples so that victim support is available on the basis of need. It's not conditional on assisting police. Secondly, we need to make sure that trafficking victims receive clear information about their rights right from the beginning, including their right to compensation. And thirdly, we need to fund culturally appropriate outreach services. And finally, We need to raise public awareness about trafficking issues, including the emerging problem of labour trafficking, because there's still a view here in Australia that trafficking is happening out there. It's not happening in our own country. So just to spend a few minutes talking about visa reform, a few months ago, the government brought together a range of NGOs who work with trafficking victims. They brought together business and union advocates, human rights groups, church groups, lawyers, and many different agencies of government to really formulate a more human rights-based approach to trafficking in this country. And it's terrific to see a number of people from the roundtable in the session today. At the start of that first meeting, there was some trepidation, there's no question, because different groups had different views about what should be done. But for the first time, I think the government was tapping into a deep vein and previously unexploited vein of knowledge that exists within organisations who work with trafficked victims. And on that first day, it was agreed that, at least in the early stages of victim support, that trafficked people should be provided with that on the basis of need. Because currently, where we are is that victim support is linked to the people trafficking visa framework. So if a person's identified as a suspected victim of trafficking and that person is willing and able to assist the police prosecution, then that person will be eligible for what they call a bridging visa F for a maximum of 30 days. The bridging visa, in effect, is the trafficked person's license to victim support services, like housing, like some legal advice, like counselling services, some of the support packages that are administered by the Office for Women. But what we know from women's experience reporting sexual assault is that women need support before they're able to consider whether or not they talk to police. I mean, most have been traumatised. They're particularly vulnerable, and many fear authority figures. So one of the problems with the current framework is that trafficking victims are being asked to make statements to police before being granted any access to those support services through Bridging Visa F. We know that making victim support conditional on assisting police also means that defence lawyers can attack the credibility of trafficking victims on the basis that their evidence was concocted in order to gain access to these visa and victim support. So one of the ways to solve these problems is to reform the current visa framework so that victim support isn't conditional on helping the police. Instead, what we proposed at the National Roundtable on People Trafficking was that victims would be given an initial 3-month period, reflection time, during which time they would receive counselling, they'd receive some safe housing, legal advice and other victim support. And it was then that they could be in a position to make a decision about how they might assist the police. The other type of visas that we talk about here are the witness protection visas that can be granted to trafficked people who help police and who would face danger if returned home. That there needs to be some redesign of this part of the visa system as well. Because for trafficking victims, giving evidence against their traffickers is very traumatic. It's a potentially dangerous process for many. While some will want to return home, there are others for which that prospect is absolutely terrifying. And I think for these individuals, a permanent witness protection visa offers reassurance that they do not have to return home to face the repercussions of speaking out. So the problem at the moment, and where we're at the moment, is that this reassurance often comes too late or not at all. So far, there's two types of visas here. There's a temporary witness protection visa and the permanent witness protection visa. So far, the temporary witness protection visas have only been granted after the prosecution process is finished, so at the end of that. So someone who was participating in the prosecution process didn't know whether they would get a visa or not. And to date, there's never been a permanent witness protection visa granted. Interestingly, even despite the lengthy appeal process in some of the Thai women who were victims in Wei Tang case were not granted either temporary or permanent witness protection visas. So one of the solutions that we discussed at the roundtable would be to cease the temporary witness protection visa because it has the same criteria as the permanent visa, and to make the permanent witness protection visa available to trafficking victims at the time that they're giving evidence, so they have some reassurance and some certainty at that point. Visa reforms were the first step towards treating trafficked people as victims of human rights violations, not just witnesses in prosecutions. But the next step is really to give trafficking victims accurate information about their legal rights and options. They've often suffered psychological or physical abuse over a long period of time. They may be victims of sexual assault or serious workplace injuries. Trafficking victims often need urgent medical assistance and counselling. They may need interpreters, housing, food, clothing, health education, legal advice, English language classes, and assistance finding employment and education. Under international human rights law, trafficking victims have a right to an effective remedy. This means that people who have been trafficked need to be given information about their rights to compensation. And under the current victim support program, trafficking victims are only entitled to 3 hours of legal advice. But there's no guarantee that this legal advice will actually end up covering the issue of compensation. And as far as I know, only one person who's been trafficked has received compensation, and this was awarded under a state scheme, so it wasn't under federal scheme, state scheme on the basis of her status as a victim of sexual assault, not as a victim of trafficking. There is no federal victim of crime compensation fund. To date, prosecutors have not sought reparations from those convicted of sexual servitude and slavery offences. And it does really create an anomalous situation. You know, where slavery is taken so seriously by legislators that it's punishable by up to 25 years imprisonment, yet the victims, or the people who have been trafficked or put in those situations, have no effective avenue to seek compensation. Just looking for a minute then to the ability of outreach services to provide appropriate outreach services. Information about making compensation claims or accessing supporting services needs to be given to victims in a language that they can understand. That's the translation issue is very important. There's one thing that we know about every trafficked victim, and that is that English will not be their first language if they speak English at all. So trafficking victims are often non-citizens with no or limited English. They may not know that trafficking, slavery, sexual servitude and debt bondage are even illegal in this country. These are people who have often had their trust abused and may not trust Australian authorities. So giving trafficking victims information about their rights in their own language, it will be necessary to use interpreters or multilingual resources. But as we all know, good quality translation and interpreters costs money, and that's money that many NGOs who are working with trafficked victims actually don't have. This is why a recent report by the Australian Institute of Criminology recommended that the government fund culturally appropriate outreach services to help trafficked women seek support and advice beyond the parameters of criminal justice system. Outreach services are one way to help identifying trafficking victims, but the other way is to increase public awareness of trafficking issues so that community members can recognise and report cases. We need to raise an understanding about what the modern-day slave trade looks like, not just in the sex industry, but in other industries as well. In particular, employer and employee organisations need guidance on how to identify cases of labour trafficking. And in fact, that's one of the great things about the roundtable. It brings together employer representatives and union advocates as well. So to this end, what we've also done is formed a working group, which actually met here at the Australian Human Rights Commission earlier today, to create guidelines, so best practice guidelines for NGOs working with trafficked people. And as the chair of a working group, I can see enormous potential for NGOs to play a key role in building community understanding of trafficking. But NGOs who are working with or who may be in contact with trafficking victims need training and resources to identify and assist trafficking victims. Put bluntly, guidelines are helpful, but funding is essential. So in conclusion, in Wei Tang, the High Court clearly told us that slavery is still a reality in the 21st century. It told us that the legal prohibition on slavery recognises the subtle and cruel methods that characterise the contemporary slave trade. What we need now is a framework for protecting the rights of trafficked people, both inside and outside the criminal justice system. I feel really optimistic, though, about the reform that's happening in Australia's approach in this area. I think the roundtable and the bringing together such diverse group of stakeholders, including different government agencies, is symbolic of a new collaborative approach to the response to human trafficking. An approach where NGOs, business, government, academics, human rights advocates and unions, where we pool resources to create a different future for trafficked people. A future where trafficked people are not treated as witnesses in prosecutions, but as the victims of crime, where their humanity and their dignity is respected. That's an Australia that I'm proud to be part of, and so it's an enormous privilege to be part of that change. Thank you.